find something of value.
The higher education community in South Africa reflected on intellectualization.
How central this humanity is.
Welcome to The Academic Citizen. I'm your host, Mahita Ikhani. Dr. Nosipho Mgomezulu and I sincerely hope you've been enjoying this journey through the interdisciplinary research potential of sound and how it can matter to the Knowledge Production Project. It really is a special joy to work on this season and to explore how podcasting can be a platform for sharing the kinds of work that is often only heard within the boundaries of academic symposia. Today's episode is another special one. We feature the soundtrack to a short film made by Dr. Julie Paterin-Josek, who is a sociologist and filmmaker and performer exploring queer embodiment, water ecologies, and audiovisual practice. As well as these interests, Dr. Paterin-Josek is a co-editor of the wonderful academic journal Visual Studies, a fellow of the Explorers Club of New York City, and a fellow of the Royal Society of Arts in London. They also created an experimental and documentary film production company called La Moule Résistante in 2023. Julie was, of course, also a presenter at the Sound Matters Symposium, which we co-hosted with the South African Journal of Science and the Saatchi Science Communication last year, 2023. The presentation offered a reflection on the role that sound plays in a 2022 short film that Julie created called Reclaim the Ground. The film is a 5-minute short, and it reflects on litter found, seen, and documented at the beach. It features material filmed at a beach in the Leningrad region, Russia, between 2020 and 2021. If, like me, you do not know much about the geography of the Leningrad region, it might help you to learn that the Leningrad region is situated in the northwest of European Russia, and it is bordered by coastlines, specifically of the Gulf of Finland in the Baltic Sea, and Lake Ladoga. If you zoom into the area on Google Maps, you'll see that the green that represents land is also peppered with many blue shapes, including the presence of water. It seems that in that two-tone cartoon world of Google Maps, at least, to be a very watery and lush landscape. We're going to play the soundtrack of the short film. It's about 5 minutes long, and after that we will share Julie's talk, where they give some theoretical framing for the film and explicate the approach that they took to designing its soundscape. If you'd like to watch the film, as well as listen to it, you can find it on Julie's website and YouTube by searching Reclaim the Ground and Julie Paterin-Josek, that's spelt Paterin-Josek. But allow me to give you a few descriptions of the visual material just to set the scene for what you're about to hear. There is hard-packed caramel-colored sand with hypnotic, rhythmic ripples created by the tide pulling out. There are human figures off in the distance or reflected in still, mirror-like puddles. The scenes are patient, unhurried. There is time to look in detail at the movements of the shallow water across those ripples of sand. And there, buried in that sand, is an old crushed plastic water bottle, seemingly merging into the sand bed. The soft, flat, tiny waves lap gentle at the sand pack. Off in the distance, a soft blue line marks the horizon, while in front, more sand gently embraces the waterline. There in the corner is another piece of plastic trash encrusted in sand. Kids dig in the distance. Water moves some organic detritus gently to and fro. A crushed beer can, chucked. More unidentifiable plastic waste lies on the beach. It seems a perfect summer scene, except for the rubbish. Perhaps my descriptions have painted a visual picture for you. Now, have a listen to those pictures instead.
A few centuries ago, the image of the world and of the earth drastically changed. Technology raised, as did mechanization. Mechanism and the domination of nature came to be core concepts and controlling images of our modern world. What was an organically oriented mentality before modern science, technology, and industry was gradually undermined and replaced by a technological mindset built around exploitation. This change in imagery was directly related to changes in human attitudes and behavior toward the earth. Farewell the older, nurturing earth image that would morally sanction human actions allowable with respect to the earth. These new images of mastery and domination function as cultural sanctions for the denudation of nature. Society needed these new images as it continued the processes of commercialization and industrialization, which depended on activities necessarily altering the earth. Deforestation, grabbing up stems to clear fields, and littering, inevitably. The new activities utilize new technologies, new materials, new content, in magnificent variation and combination. These changes did not take place quickly. They developed gradually, as did the accompanying environmental deterioration. Slowly, people stopped considering themselves parts of a finite cosmos, stopped considering nature as sacred, and stopped making sense of their bond with the ground they were born, learned to walk, breathed, and died on. As they increasingly lost connection with this ground, they started to believe the ground was their home. Damages started to grow. In every place, foot had access to walk. And soon enough, in all the places, hands had a remote contact with. This accumulated to the point nature and artifacts became almost one, as in an inadequate and clumsy biological exhibition. Some sample and document, other fight, and other never looked on. All damages are not easily noticeable, although they always remain visible, as in a perpetual yet godless sacrifice. Thank you for organizing this space for discussion. It's a bit of fresh air to end the week with, so it's really nice. Okay, so I'm a sociologist specializing in visual sociology, especially ethnographic filmmaking, and my presentation is based on a short film I made about 2 years ago, which is in the genre of documentary poetry films, a bit experimental, and I created a soundtrack for this film. It's a film I did also out of videos I shot more than a year before I started editing. It's part of the process around the film. And I will develop in my presentation how the film aims to be an eco-feminist narrative of littering. Images are about trash I found on our Russian beaches. And there's a voiceover reading of a text I made based on a seminal essay by the eco-feminist theorist Caroline Merchant. So there are three dimensions of the film I would like to discuss with you today. First, the politics of time and the value of rhythm in the production of social scientific knowledge, and how this can impact the composing of the soundtrack. Then the heuristics of sound for reflecting on positionality as explored in feminist and queer epistemologies, and how the very process of composing and performing a soundtrack can enable responsibility as defined by Donna Haraway. So the general question here is how to embed feminist ethics in filmmaking methods through the use of sound and soundtrack. So over the past few years, my visual work has been strongly influenced by decolonial practices of reclaiming visuals and their political narratives, such as with photographs or film stills through their alteration and editing. This process of reusing and altering photographs aimed at building new narratives around these images and reflect on my own positionality in my research. So besides the virtues regarding reflexivity and critical practice, this approach of using images with some delay in time and the sense of time as discontinued and slow-paced has two references of interest for a feminist filmmaking methodology. The first reference has to do with nature. Slow temporality can be found in, for instance, how the Russian filmmaker Andrei Tarkovsky builds narrative of nature and affects in most of his films. There's a, quote, distinctive time running through the shots, unquote, that makes the rhythm, which is not determined by the length of the final edited piece, but by the pressure of the time running through them. Time is then sensed as, quote, duration within nature's forces and processes. So Tarkovsky's sense of time and his innate perception of nature intensify the materiality of the cinematic image, making it feel heavy with elemental substance. With that in mind, I was interested in building a film temporality paced by descriptions of nature's processes. In the film, the rhythm of waves and of water flowing over plastic artifacts in the sand is sort of broken in its original fluidity, while the human activity in the film stays in an even slower temporality. People are in slow motion. So through littering, human intervention causes degradation. Hence the description of nature's forces and processes Tarkovsky wrote about. People stopped considering themselves parts of a finite cosmos, stopped considering nature as sacred, and stopped making sense of their boundary with the ground they were born, learned to walk, breathed, and died on. The second reference has to do with gender, because if the temporality of a film can reflect nature's process, it can also embed gender-based dynamics. And this is where slowness and discontinuity make sense in terms of ecofeminist practice as well. As famously developed by queer scholars like Michel T, Jack Elberstam, Elizabeth Freeman, the concept of queer time relates to the alternate life temporalities experienced by queer people whose trajectory just can't fit the heterosexual cisgender dominant model of adulthood pacing. So disconnection and temporalities deferring to heteronormative production are inherent part of queer lives and in contradiction with chrononormativity. This sense of time as non-linear and spread through long duration delays, including in my own editing process for this film is informed by both gender dynamics and nature's temporalities, and it's what makes time, especially rhythm, a vector of ecophonious practice that influenced my use of soundtrack as well. The first person I showed the film to, a friend and a visual anthropologist, immediately asked me, "Why did you add this music? It's unnecessarily emotional and overwhelming." Yeah. Okay, but that was the point. One of the main features of this short film is the original soundtrack I composed and scored using an electric guitar and effect pedals. And precisely because it uses an original soundtrack, the film aims to be grounded in sensorial practice. It tries to build a sensorial scape beyond its visual narrative to further reflect on accessibility and heuristics in filmmaking. Creative methods in social sciences are all about this, including filmmaking, developing ways to transmit that could possibly reach a wider audience than traditional formats like writing could ever do. So the questions I've asked myself is, does sound have the same methodological and analytical value as the visual? Is a soundtrack only a support to narrative in a documentary film? Of course, we all know many examples of documentary films experimenting with soundtrack or where the narrative is largely supported by music. There is also a very extensive literature about how music takes over the visual narrative in film, and sound design is generally an important part of the genre of poetry film, which is an experimental subcategory, sometimes crossing over with documentary filmmaking. But a lot of experimental and documentary filmmakers consider that sound in general is an important part of their process because it helps building spatio-temporal dynamics in a film. So sound is a device, among others, to create a kind of mise-en-scène around affect and experience in a film narrative. But how far can you go in music experimentation before it becomes something that contradicts your search for accessibility and inclusion in the way you produce knowledge? Because nobody except you will eventually appreciate your music, or maybe five people in the world. This is why the soundtrack in this film is connected to a broader idea of positionality. Music is extremely subjective. We all have different tastes depending on education, sensibilities, life experiences, and everyone will not be sensible to the same sounds. And furthermore, there are listening and compositional positionalities that can be grounded in intersectional part relationships, as there are, for instance, colonial ways of listening. So to what extent a sound-based narrative could convey the same sensorial knowledge to all its listeners is a difficult or impossible question that has as many answers as there are social, cultural, and political dynamics involved in how music is made. That means that the sound narrative I built for this film, based on my own positionality, might not be relevant to you at all. This also means that, like composing this soundtrack, I choose to self-imply a bit more in the final film artifact than if I would have done a documentary film without music. It's more grounded in my situated standpoint, and most importantly, it assumes, if not it relies on, this situatedness. It does not aim at an axiological, neutral analysis of littering practices in Russia, but rather tries to embed the standpoint epistemology as developed in feminist philosophy of science, using filmmaking and the making of soundtrack as a vector. So the use of soundtrack, the film further explores the materialities and effects of the scientific selves discussed by the sample theory by questioning how the manner to produce knowledge define its legitimacy, and by anchoring the film product in a socially sensorially situated framework against the famous view from nowhere denounced by many, many feminist scholars in the 1980s. Which leads me to the third part of this presentation and the notion of sound as responsibility. What matters in this film is not the soundtrack itself, but furthermore, how I made the soundtrack.
As I mentioned earlier, I used electric guitar and effect pedals. If you do not practice music and electric guitar yourself, effect pedals are devices that you can connect to the guitar and the amplifier, and they distort the sound, creating delays, reverberations, and so on. So you can accumulate effect pedals as much as you want, which creates an overall chaos and soundscape in music. And the pedals I used are handmade, mostly analog, and for two pedals out of the three I used, they are handcrafted and painted by a local artisan and engineer located in Europe, like me. So they are not mainstream pedals manufactured by global companies with production line in India or China. And furthermore, I used only echo and delay pedals to reflect both the delays and the temporalities of my filmmaking process, and the use of images shot a long time before the editing, as developed in the first part of this presentation. This choice hopefully contributes to make my filmmaking process a more holistic approach, a methodology where everything is coherently linked, and from the theoretical thread of the film to the devices used to produce it and the way the audiovisual narrative is placed. That is characteristic of feminist ethics, for which axiology should always be reflected into practice as part of a coherent system of responsibilities. So for Donna Haraway, responsibility is a powerful enacted concept, or as she calls it, a figuration that aims to generate ethics and affect through kinship and bonding. In feminist theory, this concept is largely used to refer to the more than human and the ethics of care towards animal species. Responsibility is more generally a way to reconceptualize the scholar's body as being entangled with the more than human world in complex ecologies, an entanglement that has ethical, political, and pedagogical implications.
This change in imagery was directly related to changes in human attitudes and behavior toward the earth. Farewell the older, nurturing earth image that would morally sanction human actions allowable with respect to the earth.
The fact of using equipment to compose and record the soundtrack that fits the overall ethics is part of the process of enacting feminist ethics into practice, which is closely related to responsibility, and it's a call to make all the decisions part of the filmmaking process coherent in terms of care and sustainability. Just a few words to conclude. Sound can be a powerful medium for decolonial and feminist research practice in the context of experimental documentary film soundtracks. Depending on how sound is made, recorded, and of course received, it engages with listening and compositional positionalities that result from intersectional relationships, and by doing so can hopefully contribute to the materialities of situated scientific cells. Experimental documentary soundtrack can furthermore be a platform for transmitting and enabling sensorial knowledge as part of an aesthetic experience grounded in somatic, perceptual, and cultural interactions. There is still some reflection to have on how soundtrack can help develop an ethical sensibility that actively supports feminist practice towards non-human life, including the ecology of a beach, but that's another topic for another time, yes. So thank you very much.
I'm really interested in the cultural politics and aesthetics of trash. In my own writings on rubbish and waste, I've argued that garbage is the enduring aesthetic and ethical legacy of capitalism, and that humans are best described not as Homo sapiens, or even, as Yuval Noah Harari would like to put it, as Homo Deus, but as Homo Detritus, because of how our waste has come to define so many spaces and experiences on our planet. this planet our only home. Julie's creative research takes us into another important theoretical direction, which is to consider how feminist and queer sensibilities might offer pathways for restitching our broken, our trashed relations with the natural world. The attention paid to the role of sound in helping to create new emotional and perhaps neural pathways to regarding something as prosaic as litter on beaches offers us opportunities to think differently about how we think about trash. As Julie terms it, responsibility is a modality of seeking appropriate methods and strategies for figuring out what to do with the feelings that emerge when we look at litter. In Julie's film, sound is not simply an add-on to the imagery, but an integral part of the aesthetic and intellectual project of the statements being made, and the presentation of an eco-feminist and queer attitude towards the ground, that beautiful wet sand. Julie created the sounds with their own marshmallow pink electric guitar and accessories, thus embodying and performing the feeling of the sound in a powerful integration of ethic and aesthetic. And perhaps this is what sound can do, somehow more viscerally and gutturally than images alone. The vibration of the sound waves force our bodies to become involved in the aesthetics in tangible ways, beyond the increasingly disconnected acts of looking. We've all seen litter. We've all seen the images of the piles of trash accumulating in so many parts of the planet. Not just beaches, be they near Leningrad's coast or any other. In the Atacama Desert in Chile, at the bottoms of oceans, in ocean gyres, choking rivers, in nature reserves, at the edge of cities, in our cities. Everywhere we look, there is our litter. Perhaps seeing it is not enough to force us to do something about it. Perhaps we need to start listening to how it feels when we look at it. This episode of The Academic Citizen was hosted by me, Mahita Ikhani. It was produced and promoted by Fumani Dwara and edited by Andrew Burnett. The Academic Citizen is funded by the South African Research Chair in Science Communication, which is in turn funded by the South African National Research Foundation. We thank Dr. Julie Paterin-Josek for their presentation at Sound Matters and for their permission to include the soundtrack from their film, Reclaim the Ground. Please find it on www.juliepaterinjosek. That's JuliePaterinJosek.com or YouTube, Googling the same words and names. The Sound Matters Symposium was co-hosted by the South African Journal of Science. The opening jingle of our podcast was designed by Victoria De La Harp. You can listen to all our podcasts, including our archive of previous seasons at www.theacademiccitizen.org. And you can follow us on all the socials at The Academic Citizen. We welcome feedback at our email address, theacademiccitizen@gmail.com.